The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
In April of 1968, the civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee. Almost immediately after this event, and indeed for over 50 years now, there have been many, including King's family, who have questioned the official explanation for his death. Conspiracy theories have abounded regarding who was involved in the killing of a man who had provided hope to millions and had led the movement for the rights of African Americans. As part of our series, The Conspiracy Files, News Talk reporter Simon Tierney has been investigating. Now, before we come to Simon, we're going to listen to the last words spoken by King publicly the night before he was killed in Memphis, prophetic words which are all the more chilling in retrospect.
We've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
And that was Martin Luther King's last speech before he was killed. Good morning, Simon. He seemed to be almost anticipating his assassination. How aware was Martin Luther King of his own vulnerability?
He was very aware, Pat, and you can hear it in that extraordinary speech there that he delivered the night before he was killed. When he'd flown to Memphis just a few days before he delivered it, his flight had actually been delayed due to a bomb scare. And that's what he's referencing in those remarks. Tragically, of course, his prophecy turned out to be true just 24 hours after that speech was delivered at the Mason Chapel.
So what was the official line about what happened to Martin Luther King at the infamous Lorraine Hotel in Memphis?
Well, he'd actually flown to Memphis on March the 29th of 68 to support black sanitary workers in the city who were fighting for equal pay with their white counterparts. And on April the 4th, he was standing on the balcony outside room 306 of the Lorraine Motel, where he always stayed in that city. It was one of the few places where black people were welcome to spend the night in Memphis. And he was speaking to musician Ben Branch about a scheduled event that night when at 6:01 p.m. a single bullet entered his right cheek, travelled into his spinal cord and lodged in his shoulder, causing him to be pronounced dead just an hour later. And the official line is that the fatal bullet was fired by James Earl Ray, an escaped convict who was alleged to be a white supremacist. The shot was said to have been fired from the window of a boarding house just across the street, Pat, and his fingerprints and his alone were on the weapon retrieved at the scene. He went on the run after the murder, but was caught and arrested 2 months later in London in June of 68.
Direct from our newsroom in Washington, in color, this is the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite.
Good evening. Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. Police have issued an all-points bulletin for a well-dressed young white man seen running from the scene.
Martin Luther King, 20 minutes ago, died.
Some very sad news for all of you, and I think sad news for all of our fellow citizens and people who love peace all over the world. And that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
News of Ray's arrest came first from the FBI chief Edgar Hoover in Washington. He said that Ray was carrying two Canadian passports and a fully loaded pistol when he landed at London from Lisbon. 6,000 FBI agents, together with police from over 100 countries, have been looking for Ray in the 2 months that have elapsed since Dr. King's murder. And now the trail ends here at Cannon Row Police Station.
Now, James Ellery was extradited back to the United States and he was sentenced to 99 years in prison for Martin Luther King's murder. But almost immediately, the conspiracy theories began to emerge. Why was that, Simon?
Well, he'd initially pleaded guilty to the murder in order to avoid the electric chair, which was the form of execution at that time, Pat. And a few days later, he recanted his guilty plea, saying that he'd been coerced by his lawyer and the FBI. He said that he'd been approached by a shadowy figure by the name of Raoul, who had instructed him to purchase a rifle, which he then gave to this man, and that he therefore did not personally shoot MLK. This is typically cryptic of Ray, Pat. In his interviews, he's infuriatingly vague and sketchy with the ways that he answers questions. And this inevitably provided fertile ground, of course, for conspiracy theories to foment. Because he pleaded guilty initially, he automatically, therefore, forfeited a trial. And this is a great historical shame, really, as a trial would almost certainly have shed more light on the details of what actually happened, and we probably wouldn't be discussing it today. However, even Ray's own lawyer, Percy Foreman, didn't believe that this figure of Raoul was real, so Ray appeared to be unreliable. In this clip, we're going to hear James Earl Ray being interviewed in 1977, discussing the moment when he claims that he heard about the killing and then his association with the so-called Raoul.
So you heard all this confusion? I turned and flipped on the radio. They said Dr. King's been shot. Did you think you were set up at that point?
No, I was headed toward New Orleans when I had the radio. And I used to keep the radio on. I think I have too strong feelings about the shooting, but I think 15 or 20 minutes later, they mentioned the Mustang, Whiteman, and instead of going towards New Orleans and making any phone calls, I just turned left and went towards Alabama.
You knew that you were supposed to meet Raoul in Memphis?
Yes.
On a certain day?
Yes.
And you did that?
Yes.
And you, in the morning?
I know it was nighttime.
At nighttime, the night before?
Yes, it was raining, yes.
The killing. And did you spend the evening? Did you go out and have dinner? Did you, what happened?
No, that's not. I got rid of the rifle.
Yes.
And that would have been April 3rd.
April 3rd.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Playboy has quoted to Percy Foreman as saying that you invented Raoul to feed conspiracy theories. What do you say to it?
Oh, no, Percy Foreman, he's been...
Your friend, wasn't
it? Well, no, I won't say he's my friend. He was my attorney for a while.
You didn't invent Raoul?
No, I didn't invent
Raoul. Raoul was a real human being, at least he was at that time.
And that was James Earl Ray speaking in 1977. King's own family never accepted the official line really from the get-go, did they, Simon?
No, they didn't. And indeed, they don't to this day, Pat. It's important to put MLK's assassination in its historical context. This was the decade, of course, of political assassinations. JFK, Malcolm X and Robert Kennedy not long after Martin Luther King. And the King family believed that the assassination was the result of a high-level government plot and probably carried out by the FBI and others, including the mafia, the local mafia in Memphis. Now, this might sound unlikely to many people today, but in order to understand their view, we must appreciate the horrendous way that the FBI treated Martin Luther King during his lifetime. And it was eye-opening when I was doing the research on this, because J. Edgar Hoover, the director and founder, of course, of the FBI, he carried out a relentless reign of terror against Martin Luther King for fear that his popularity, I suppose, would disrupt the status quo. He resented Martin Luther King's criticism of the FBI for not having black agents and for not properly investigating civil rights cases. His phone was wiretapped from the mid-60s until his death. He was portrayed as a communist. He was followed by FBI agents wherever he went, and even his hotel bedrooms were were bugged. And this really goes to the heart, I think, of what this series is all about. While a conspiracy theory might seem fanciful to people in positions of privilege and power, they can be very legitimate for people who have been marginalised and who have seen an altogether different side to a trusted organisation, say like the FBI. And it's for this reason that we can't be immediately dismissive.
Now, there was one particularly disdainful dirty trick that the FBI is alleged to have played on King's family, which I think has helped to feed the conspiracy theories.
Indeed, Pat, and perhaps most egregiously, through the bugging of his hotel bedrooms, the FBI recorded audio of Martin Luther King having sex during one of his well-documented extramarital affairs. This was sent anonymously to the King family in 1964 and was picked up by his wife, Coretta. The tape was accompanied by a letter with the now infamous and ominous final line, and I quote, "There is only one thing left for you to do." It became known as the suicide letter because this line was interpreted as the FBI encouraging Martin Luther King to kill himself. So for these justifiable reasons, many people started to believe that the FBI were in some way involved in a covert mission to eliminate King. I mean, even as late as 1999, Coretta, his wife, she declared, "There is abundant evidence of a major high-level conspiracy in the assassination of my husband, Martin Luther King Jr." So in this next piece of audio, Pat, we're going to hear from Dexter King, the youngest son of MLK, when he visited James Earl Ray in an extraordinary meeting in prison in 1997. We'll also hear from Jesse Jackson, civil rights leader and friend of MLK, who was standing beside him on that balcony in Memphis when he was killed, both of whom believed that James Earl Ray was a scapegoat.
The youngest son wanted to look into the eyes of a terminally ill James Earl Ray and ask one question in particular.
Did you kill my father?
No, I didn't, no.
And then King offered this.
I believe you, and my family believes you, and we are going to do everything in our power to try and make sure that justice will prevail.
Take me back to the moment when you reached out and shook James Earl Ray's hand. What was that like?
It was very moving, a feeling of relief to finally meet face to face with the man who has been accused, but has since, from the beginning, said he was innocent. I continue to hear that he confessed, and in fact he didn't confess. He pled guilty, which is different technically speaking. I believe him because there's so much new evidence that has been presented to me and my family vis-a-vis his attorney, Bill Pepper. Also, the fact of the matter is he has said from the beginning he was innocent. I asked him why he pled guilty. He said basically his attorney at the time cut a deal behind the scenes with the district attorney, and unbeknownst to him, he was forfeiting his rights to a trial. As soon as he found that out, 3 days later, he recanted and has since been trying to get a trial. So, spiritually speaking, I felt very moved by the meeting, because for me and my family, it brings us closer to the process of reconciliation, healing, and ultimately closure.
James Earl Ray, who was convicted of killing Dr. King, why have you said before you believe he didn't act alone?
He didn't have the money, the motive, or the organization skills to do it. A lone killer getting out of town at 6 o'clock, getting into Mississippi and all that, end up in London. He couldn't have done that by himself.
What do you think happened?
The government was very involved.
You think so? To what extent do you think J. Edgar Hoover played a role in...
I have no idea. That gets into too much detail, except I know this guy couldn't do it by himself. And there was a very public hatred for Dr. King expressed by the FBI and the government.
Civil rights leader Jesse Jackson there. In 1999, the King family filed a civil suit. Now, what was the point of that and what emerged?
Well, the family filed the civil suit, Pat, in order to try and expose information and reveal any cover-up that may have existed. And after 12 days of hearings and the testimony of 70 witnesses, the jury unanimously found government agencies guilty of conspiracy in the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and that Mr. Ray was set up to take the blame. Now, while I was researching this week's edition of the Conspiracy Files, it actually took me quite a while to figure out exactly what the alleged government conspiracy theory is. Essentially, the belief is that J. Edgar Hoover's assistant at the FBI paid cash to the local Memphis mafia, and in turn, they then hired a corrupt police officer to fire the fatal bullet, in which case Ray wasn't culpable. Let's listen to Bernice King, MLK's daughter, reflecting on the implications of the 1999 trial.
We had a civil trial that we opened in 1998, 99, and proved that it was a conspiracy that involved federal, state, local, and even, you know, the mafia that was involved in the assassination of my father. So that's on record. So he wasn't the first. Whoever shot him, they were precise. James L. Ray couldn't be that precise. I mean, when I looked at the autopsy pictures, you know, I was the first one in my family to actually see the autopsy pictures. Everybody else wasn't ready. When I looked at those autopsy pictures and the whole jaw gone, I mean, and it was like he was in mid-sentence, even though he may have been or may not, but it looked like that. It looked like he was doing this, like he was saying, you know, saying something. And I thought about the notion that as the gunshot ringed out, it was like saying, "Now shut your mouth." I don't use that other word in, and because it was that kind of picture. It was very intentional to silence him forever.
Bernice King, daughter of Martin Luther King, speaking just a few weeks ago. So, Simon, the King family and indeed many others remain steadfast in the belief that a larger conspiracy was at play in the assassination of Martin Luther King, but conflicting theories remain.
Very much so, Pat. It's important that we retain balance, of course, when looking at conspiracy theories. The King family pleaded with Bill Clinton's administration in the 90s to commission a fresh investigation around the same time as the civil suit. Clinton obliged, but the investigation found that James Earl Ray was in fact guilty and that there had been no government involvement. But why would people with alternate theories believe the conclusions of an investigation into government when it was commissioned by the government itself?
Well, as is becoming apparent in this series, we may never know the full truth. Simon Tierney, thank you very much for that. And we look forward to another installment of The Conspiracy Files next week when we examine the theories surrounding the 1969 moon landing.